Meta Sarmiento is a Filipino poet and rapper from Guam. He is a National Poetry Slam semifinalist with Slam Nuba, a TEDx speaker and winner of Spoken Word for the World 2015, where he was flown to Paris to perform during the UN climate negotiations. He is a born teacher capable of motivating ghetto kids and old hippies alike. I spoke with Meta yesterday. The kids are the focus, aren't they?
Yeah.
Isn't that the case with a lot of what you do?
Yeah, definitely.
I've noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you really engage with the kids.
Definitely.
Don't you?
I love it.
Is that because somebody engaged with you?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's basically how I got started. I was in junior year of my high school, and my English teacher was like, hey, you need to come down and see this performance. I was like, what kind of performance is it? And it turns out it was a spoken word poetry performance. And I had no idea spoken word existed at all, right? Like, I was just oblivious to this type of art. And so the collective that was there, they performed a bunch of poems that really resonated with me in ways that other poets couldn't, other poets that we've studied in class. And from that point, I started hitting the poetry slams in Guam, and the organizers really started guiding me and mentoring me and sort of helping me find my voice, right, and helping me decide what I would use my voice for. So I think a lot of the reason why I work with the youth so much is because I'm sort of reciprocating that, right, and I understand the power of good guidance and good mentorship. Not that I'm perfect, but...
Well, I watched the video of your performance of Watch Your Mouth.
Yeah.
And it brought tears to my eyes.
Wow, that means so much.
And it wasn't the only one. I spent 2 hours today looking at videos of you reading your poems. And every single one of them, I cried.
Thank you so much.
How do you do that?
I don't know. First off, it's always funny to hear someone say like, oh yeah, your poem kind of made me cry. Because I'm like, I'm sorry, but,
no,
but I'm also not sorry because it happened. Yeah, I think that, you know, as a poet, as a writer, it took me a long time to figure it out, but I think that I really just care about human connection, right? There's a lot of politics involved in my work. There's a lot of identity in my work, but at the end of the day, it's really about forming a connection with somebody and helping them through whatever they're going through and really just trying to inspire them about, you know, hoping that my personal transformations inspired personal transformations for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I just stay real. I guess that's the how-to, is stay real in your poetry and don't sacrifice truth for technique too much.
And did that come to you along the way? Did you learn that, or did somebody impress that upon you?
I think being exposed to the national poetry scene and international poetry scene kind of helped me understand that, because growing up in Guam, you're so far away from everything, right? And when you leave the island and you start to experience these new poets and new stories and new voices, you start to see things differently and your perspective deepens and widens. And I think it was that experience that made me sort of believe in this idea that, yo, I need to focus a lot more on just connecting instead of being a flashy poet on the microphone. Because I think a lot of young poets, when they first start out, it's all about being clever and being witty on the microphone and not so much about writing truth and connecting to people.
Huh.
Yeah.
So is there, how did you learn that?
Ah, man.
You mentioned that you learned it by being exposed to the outer world out there in poetry. But how did that get in there?
I think one of the most meaningful experiences for me at a young age was I performed at my old high school, right? And after my performance, I performed this poem called Riot, and it kind of chronicled my gang affiliation and how I almost died and how I had to wake up and I had to change my life around. And at that moment, this kid came up to me and he said, bro, I just want to thank you. You changed my life. And I think those interactions is what helped me really solidify this idea that, wow, if I really focus on connecting to people like this, I can actually reach people and change their lives. So seeing that and being a part of that kind of change right in front of you personally, I think that's what helped me like really hold on to that, and it just completely ingrained it in my mind.
It sounds like you had a pretty remarkable family too. I'm thinking of the anecdote that I came across where at one point a policeman brought you to your mother,
mm-hmm.
and he said, "Do you recognize this boy?" And she said, "No, I do not recognize him."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my God, you know, it's like I would not have had the wisdom to think of that in that moment.
Right.
So that tells me a lot about your mother.
My mom, man, she's such a strong woman. So that anecdote comes from my poem called Mama's Boy, which I might perform. I think a lot of my strength and my own wisdom and my upbringing is due to a lot of the brave brown women in my life, like my mom and my older sister and the woman in my community as well. She was just, you know, being herself and being real in that moment and told the police officer, no, that's not my son. Like, I don't know that person. She had just experienced enough, right? All of the crazy things that I was doing in the street. And my dad followed up right behind her and said, no, that's our son. That's, come here.
Right. But it was her way of saying, boom,
right.
Get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. and presumably you did.
I did. I definitely did. It was such a clear message. Like, I didn't know up until that point how much I loved my mom and my family until for the first time it felt like they didn't want me anymore. And that's what kind of just snapped everything into perspective and was like, okay, wow, I need to really reevaluate my life. And I'm like 15, 14 at this moment. So it's just, I didn't have the vocabulary at that time to articulate how I was feeling, but I knew that I had just messed up so bad that my own mom doesn't want me. Like, that's, you hear stories about that and you always tell yourself, I never want to be that kid. And then you end up being that kid.
How about that? Yeah. Tell me about Guam.
Yeah.
Did American culture permeate into Guam?
Mm-hmm.
Hip hop, all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Guam is a unincorporated territory of the United States. It's a very small island. It's like 6 miles wide and 7 miles long. And so a lot of what everyone's into kind of just spreads throughout the island really quickly. And our schools are modeled after the United States education curriculum. So everything that the States is doing, we're doing as well. A lot of like the subcultures from the States found their way to Guam. Hip hop, poetry, obviously. And a whole bunch of other things, like just the urban culture itself definitely found its way into Guam. And it makes it a really interesting place to live because you're literally caught between the street and the jungle, but also metaphorically. So you have these really urban subcultures in your face, but then you're also an islander, and then you have the islander culture mixed in with that. So it's this constant back and forth, a dance almost between Americanized culture and the Pacific Islander culture.
Interesting. And yet, you went to college and mm-hmm. got an MFA, didn't you?
An MA in teaching, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. How did you get off the urban track onto that track? How did that happen for you?
I feel like a lot of what I do, it's so like just intermixed, right? Like, I don't think that I completely left behind the urban culture, right? Because, like, that's what raised me. Like, I love hip-hop. I love the streets. At the core of my being, I'm still really gritty, you know? But I also see the value in bringing a person who has those experiences into the classroom, right? I always tell people, like, what happens when the gangster becomes a scholar? A lot of really amazing things can happen because that person is now a bridge between snobby academia and the homies in the streets, right? And so there's a lot of building that can happen between this person, and that person can become a bridge. And so the reason I got my bachelor's in English literature and my master's in teaching is because I wanted to do just that. I wanted to go back into my communities. I wanted to go back to work with the same kids that are going through the same problems that I was going through and help them through it all.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really interesting. You know, that gives you a lot of credibility in a couple of different worlds.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty interesting, too.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. You know, it's why a white boy like me can appreciate what you do, partly.
Mm-hmm.
aside from the truth of you're speaking.
Right.
But, and it's also apparent to the gangbanger in that Watch Your Mouth poem that you wrote. Mm-hmm. He thought you were effing great.
Right. Exactly.
So, you know, we both think you're great.
Right.
Go figure.
Yeah.
An old hippie and a gangbanger both love you.
Right.
How does that happen? That's just amazing.
Connection. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, it's obvious to me that you've been empowered. And
definitely.
You're still being empowered.
Definitely.
And it's all about, for you, empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is it important to you to be yourself empowered, but to empower others along the way.
Yeah, that's really at the end of the day, man. Like, the biggest hope, right, for my work is to just inspire that kind of empowerment.
Huh.
Yeah.
So you got a degree. You moved away from Guam to Denver.
Yeah.
Why Denver?
You know, I've traveled a lot for both poetry and hip hop. I've been to L.A., been to New York, all the other major cities that people would expect me to have settled in. And I think at this point in my career, I'm just not ready to be in that kind of crazy. And I think Denver just has a really beautiful balance between the urban and sort of maybe rural, I'd like to say. I can be inside of the city doing a lot of this urban art. And when I'm feeling overwhelmed, I can get in a car and just drive up to the mountains and camp by Turquoise Lake, you know? Like, I can just decompress. And I've really admired a lot of the Denver poets for a very long time. Since I started back in junior year of my high school, I was already watching Denver poets on YouTube, and that's like the beginning of spoken words explosion into the internet. So, like, poets like Ken Arkind and Panama, there were two poets that I really looked up to. So I just figured, yeah, maybe I should, you know, go to Denver and see what happens. And I also knew that I would stick out, for better or for worse, because there aren't too many API poets in Denver.
API?
Mm-hmm. Asian Pacific Islander.
Oh.
Right. So there's not a lot of Asian Pacific Islander poets doing this kind of work. And if there are, they're sort of on the fringes and on the periphery of the work. So I figured, yeah, I should just go plow through to the middle and see what happens.
And you're part of the collective down there. What's it called?
Slam Nuba.
Yes.
We could.
Tell me about that organization.
Yeah, so Slam Nuba, they are one of Denver's main poetry collectives. They're an organization as well. And they host workshops. They host poetry slams for the community. And they have been a very respected slam team for years. So that's one reason why I wanted to get involved with Slam Nuba. And they also have a lot of love for just black poets and poets of color. So I decided to just step into that scene and see what happened.
Huh.
Yeah.
And is there a place where a lot of the performances take place?
Yeah, so right now a lot of Slam Nuba events are happening at Brother Jeff's Cultural Center, which is in the Five Points.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a really cool space. There's art everywhere, and it just feels so communal. When you walk in there, it just feels like a really good community.
One of the turning points in your career so far has been your entrance into a contest. Spoken?
Yeah.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So I entered Spoken Word for the World in 2015. It was hosted by Global Call for Climate Action. And basically, they teamed up with this powerful Marshallese poet by the name of Cassie Jenil Kijener. The Marshalls are a chain of islands in the Pacific that are being affected by the rising tides. The water is literally rising. It's taking their land. And so she had the opportunity to speak at the United Nations, I think, a couple years prior to this particular contest, and she got to speak in the main forum, so all of the UN members were in there, and her video went viral. So this organization teamed up with her to host this new contest, and what they were looking for were poets who had poetry surrounding the issue of climate change and environmental justice. So the process was really awesome. You recorded the video of yourself, you uploaded it, and then it was sort of like the top batch of poets would get accepted, and then there would be votes to see who would garner the most attention and whatnot. So I ended up being selected as one of the winners, and it was amazing because all the winners were from the Pacific, or we're tied to the Pacific.
Interesting.
Yeah, but we're from different places in the world. So Eunice was from Australia. Issa and Teresa were from the Bay Area, right? And I was living in Guam. So we were so separated, but so connected at the same time. And for me, going to Paris, that was a prize. We were flown to Paris to perform poetry at the United Nations climate negotiations.
Ooh.
Yeah. Wow. So it was a really interesting experience, especially because it was 2 weeks after the terrorist bombings. So it was a really weird time in Paris. There was just so much tension everywhere. But learning from the, you know, these amazing, powerful women who were a bit further on in their careers was just an amazing thing for me. And also being able to bring stories of our people into spaces that would normally marginalize our voices, would push us aside and say, we don't want to hear it. Right, we were able to be center stage and tell the stories of the Pacific and tell the stories of indigenous peoples who are being affected by climate change. Because I think a lot of times we talk about climate change, there's a lot of science in it. And so a lot of people get turned off, right? Because they don't understand scientific jargon and whatnot. So our job was to put narration to the science. And the CEO of 350.org said the poets that are here today are proof of our physics. And I was just like, are you a poet? Like, that was really poetic. Yeah. So yeah, it was just a really amazing time being able to bring voices and stories of our region surrounding climate change.
And the story you brought to the table was a weird
haze.
Mist or haze.
Yeah.
Was that from fires across the, what was that
yeah.
from?
Yeah, so there were fires in Indonesia and in Papua New Guinea. And the smoke was affecting the weather patterns or whatever, whatnot. And so it was traveling across the ocean and ending up in Guam. So it was beautiful. There's like this beautiful mist, like this haze. But it was really bad for us because it was getting into our lungs, right? It's technically smoke, right? We were breathing that for about an entire week. It was just blanketing the island. And I got sick from it. So I decided to write a poem about that. And that's the poem I entered. And I was still sick when I entered the contest. So if you look back to the video, like I sound sick, I'm congested and stuff like that. So it was a crazy experience.
Have a lot of doors open for you since that since you won that prize?
I wouldn't say a lot as far as quantity goes, but I think a lot of doors with quality, right? A lot of people who are extremely interested in this kind of work have been paying attention a lot more.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it definitely adds to my prestige as a poet from a business standpoint, right? Like, oh, yeah, this guy won this and went to the UN. So that's definitely opening up for me.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you also have a CD that you've produced.
Yeah, I put out an album recently. Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, so Apartment 207 is the name of the album. I wrote the entire album when I first moved to Denver in Apartment 207. So it was the first unit I had ever lived in Denver. And mind you, this is my first time leaving home, period, for good. So it was a really big step for me, and I was just going through a lot of self-doubt and just emotional turmoil, like, should I keep doing this? Maybe I should move back home. And I decided not to, and writing this album kind of helped me through all that confusion. So if anybody's chasing something bigger than themselves, which I think a lot of people are, then they'll understand the fear and the doubt and the triumph in the album.
Uh-huh.
And if you're into rap, then you're definitely going to like it.
Yeah. Well, I watched the videos that you have on your website based on that, three or four of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I would call it conscious hip hop.
Yeah, a lot of people have labeled it conscious hip hop.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's not gangster rap.
Definitely not gangster rap by any means, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Will you do a poem or two for us, please?
I can definitely do a poem or two. Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah. What kind of poems do you guys want to hear?
Rise out of my seat poem, squirm into the dent in the seat poems.
You want me to do Mama's Boy since we talked about it?
I'd love it.
Yeah? Okay, yeah, I can do that.
If you're up for it.
Yeah.
If you just joined the program, we're talking to Meta Sarmiento, slam poet from Guam, visiting our valley, and we'll get to why in a few minutes. But here's some poetry from Meta.
My homeboys cracked a joke once about a gang rape, And I'm glad my older sister taught me the weight of the word no. Told me that before I ask what it takes to be a man, I should ask what it takes to be a woman. Brave brown women have always been my searchlight. They love like a life raft, carry the undeserving, move us until gratitude learns to catch a breath. And how do I repay this rescue? I'm learning to dismantle the crown I was born with, to walk away from the seat I was promised, the one reserved for the head of the household, the hungry breadwinner, me, this brown boy blood lined with a matriarch's power once. But the echo of patriarchy is deep and loud, and the men who conquered the world left no space for my softening. But mom teaches me that instinct tells our grip to reach for a mother's breast before it hungers for the knife. That before a storm becomes a cutting wind, it starts as a warm ocean. Brave brown women have always been my harbor, even after all of my destroying. And I don't want to leave any more wrecks. I don't want to be the threat that forces prayer. I'm sorry, I still got to tell my homies that joking of rape is killing the bodies that nurture us. I'm sorry, I still have to sit them down and explain to them feminism isn't women simply hating men. Feminism is safe zone for women to heal without our bloody hands. It's a story without men as the main character. Their job isn't to script us a role in it. Our role is to interrogate our love affair with domination. Strip the guns, homie. Melt the bullets and admit. Blood scares us as much as a thought of losing our mothers. I forget when I stopped being a mama's boy. When I told mom stop holding my hand in public. When I stopped showing any love at all because the hood said to be a weapon. Brass knuckles don't smile. Triggers ain't a church choir. We don't sing. We scream till silence is the only sound left. I remember cops taking me home instead of to the precinct. Knocking on my front door and asking, "Ma'am, is this your son?" And mom saying, "No, I don't know that boy." And it was the first step toward tears I forgot I was allowed to have. A glimpse of the shoreline that called for my return. And I know the trek is long. Unlearning the violence I inherited requires a knife as tough as a mother's backbone. But I am ready for the cutting, for the surgery the storm gives the cliffside. Because I want to be a brave brown man who can love like a brave brown woman too.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to perform that poem.
You're so welcome. Huh. That's really impressive. What did your mom think? Have you recited that to her?
I haven't yet. She's visiting in the summer, though. So
has she seen the video, maybe?
She hasn't, no. She has no idea it exists. So.
Oh, you should give it to her on Mother's Day.
That would be amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, actually, that would be tight. Cow. That would be an extremely emotional
yes,
Mother's Day gift. No?
Holy cow, can you imagine? That is really cool. Huh? How about one more?
Yeah, sure.
Please.
Yeah. Let me read one from my book. Maybe not one that's as long.
And this book will be for sale at the Poetry Slam on Friday night.
Tie your shoes, kid.
So I'll read a shorty from my book. It's called The Lessons in Departures. Accept your own apologies. Love ends with forgiveness. Sometimes home is a body and a voice. Photographs are proof I am conquering my insecurities. Going to bed after laughing helps me sleep better. My insomnia is jealous of my dreams. My passion has taken me farther than any of my fears have. The only direction I wish to travel is forward, always. Loneliness is an honest mirror. They'll demand your love. You're not obligated to give it. An expensive drink is still just cheap therapy. The size of a house does not dictate how much happiness it can hold. A healthy bird must leave its mother's nest. Time is not the enemy. My lack of patience is. Someone else's success is not my failure. My heart deserves to smile after all it has survived.
Meta Sarmiento. Yeah.
Thank you.
How do you find these remarkable people, Alia Howe? And thank you for dropping them into my midst.
I sort of want to say the divine has a hand in this because really, I knew I wanted to have a host when I was asked to produce the first poetry slam at the Temporary in Willits, that I wanted to have a really imbued, embedded in the spoken word, in the poetry slam movement, to come and host this, to hold this community into what this can really be. And I just do not have time in poetry slams. And so I began asking around, and some people were busy. And then I had Nicole Haag up here sharing a story from Denver. And I said, hey, you know anyone who'd be interested in hosting the poetry slam? And she gave me two names, and Meta responded, followed up, and I was just in trust and in delight and surprise as I began to research and exchange communications with Meta. It's been smooth, it's been effortless, and I'm really excited. Yeah.
Well, not only are you hosting the Poetry Slam, Meta, but you're doing several workshops in local schools and libraries.
Yep.
Which one of you would like to talk about that?
Let me just talk about the events. The main event is Friday at the Temporary. Doors open at 6 p.m. and the Poetry Slam will start at 6:30 p.m. And this is $8 if... Actually, sorry, the ticket line closed late on Thursday night. So actually, you can't get tickets online anymore. You'll just be able to buy them on the door. But the Poetry Slam is going to feature youth poets from the group called First Word, and then poets from the Aspen Poets Society, from the Poetry Market, and all ages. So I'm rather excited in watching how Meta handles this age range. Before the Poetry Slam, at 4 o'clock, there's a kids' workshop. What did you call the workshop, Meta? Something about superheroes.
Yes, yes. So we're dubbing it the Superhero Kids Workshop.
Yeah.
And that is at 4 o'clock and at the Temporary as well. And then on Saturday at 10:30 a.m. till 12:30 p.m. at the Basalt Regional Library, Meta is hosting another workshop, which is about body image.
Yes, yeah.
And this is free, and it is hosted by the Basalt Regional Library in their outreach and supporting locals having an experience of poetry writing, of storytelling. And I'm really thrilled when I told them that Meta was coming on, that they just jumped in to host that. So a big shout out to Basalt Library. And then also a huge shout out to Aspen Words, who has been part of supporting Meta coming out here. We couldn't have done it without Aspen Words.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And of course, the Temporary in saying, let's have it here.
So bridging communities.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like that's your specialization.
That's what I'm trying to do.
That's what you're good at. Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you for joining us on Katie and Kay.
Thank you so much for having me.
I really appreciate you coming in. And Alia?
Thank you, Luke. Thank you.
Meta has his own YouTube channel, and I highly recommend that you check those videos out. If they don't move or inspire you, you are a rock, not a human being.